So I wanted to ask you about NEATSA, if I can.
Yeah.
Just because, as I mentioned, they're celebrating the 30th, celebrating their 30th anniversary this year, and they got various things planned that I can't
Course.
go into. But you said it was one of the first places you played outside of the UK, right?
It was a time when things were like really, I mean, looking back on it now, I didn't really notice it at the time, but a lot of things were kind of really happening for me. The first time I played NHTSA, the Face magazine actually came with me, and interviewed me for like 7-page spread or something like that in the Face, which so that they were there as well. They documented it. They took photos that night and they were there and they interviewed me at a hotel. And you know, it didn't really like dawn on me like how like I don't know what the word is here, like prestigious or how fortunate that was in that sense, you know. To me it was just like approaching it was just like any other gig but my first one in Spain, you know, so I didn't really know what to expect. But you know, I was really excited because you know it went on until like 6 in the morning or something like that. And you know what, the people I met that night, I'm still friends with, you know.
Coco and people like that, or
Coco, you know, I'm not sure if I met Pablo that night or Fra that night in particular, but I remember the next night I went and played at Nasty, which was like its sister club in Madrid, and
yeah.
Ev, who was working there that night, is still a friend now, you know. You know, it's an amazing time for really making like building a lot of friendships around the world, you know. And the one with NHTSA is one of the most strongest ones, you know. I think I've played there every year since. It feels like I have, anyway. But I mean, you know, in a positive way, it feels, you know, I can't like forgotten how many times I've played, and I always walk away from it. You know, I love that moment, like, you know, when you leave the club at like 6 in the morning and there's all those people just like spilling out onto the parallel, and just the atmosphere and everything, you know, it's just yeah, I mean, I love Barcelona. I really do love Barcelona. And you know, when people say, oh, you know, if you weren't living in the UK, like where would you live? You know, sort of thing. Like, definitely, you know, Barcelona is one of those places that I feel like a connection with, you know, enough to you know, spend more time there, definitely.
What sort of year was it you first played?
I think it was 2001.
Hmm.
I can tell you the issue of the Face. It was one with Eminem on the cover. Do you know, it was quite a controversial cover because they had there was a version of the Face where it had Eminem wearing a pink t-shirt,
Rings a
pink
bell.
shirt, but it wasn't actually pink in reality. I could tell you actually. I could just let me just put it
They
in.
made it pink, or and that was kind of controversial.
Oh, it was 2000, May 2002.
Ah, perfect, perfect.
So we would have gone there early 2002 then, because
Right.
yeah, so it would have probably been March 2002. I think I would have gone there.
Do you have any tunes that make you think of Anita in particular?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I actually played as my last track when I played there a few weeks ago. The Thin White Duke version of Silver Screen Shower Scene. By Felix the House Cat. Just I remember like I remember around that period, you know, like myself and all I think I could speak for a bunch of other DJs like you know Felix and Soul Wax and those guys, you know, we would always look forward to like whenever Stuart Price, Jacques Lacan, Finn White Duke, Labour of Digital would put out a new remix, because we'll all be clamoring to play it. And I remember those records, that style of production sounded fantastic at NHTSA in the theatre, because it's that balance of like power, like size, but also enough of like a knowing nod to alternative culture, you know, like he would like, you know, the things like with the bass guitars running through it and stuff, and you know, it'd have like a heavy Pixies influence, you know, with the bass parts. So it felt like that. It felt like an extension of what we'd grown up loving through the 90s, but transposed to like a big room and it being like a dance record, you know? And I always thought that like NHTSA and subsequently, you know, Primavera was a real, you know, it was a very, very natural and fluid representation of what I had grown up and loved in the UK, you know? It was like alternative culture, but like through that lens, but completely crystal clear, you know?
I was speaking to Coco about it, and we asked him what his favorite time of NHTSA was, you know, from like 1994. And I think he said that period, like 2000, 2001, 2002, because he loved things like LCD Sound System, you know, which had a bit of that rock influence behind them. And, you know, you could play that kind of thing as well.
Mm. Yeah, like, I totally get that. I mean, like it was a really interesting time, you know, where like there was a very pure injection of like the part of alternative culture, which for me was incredibly like infectious, and it understood like the complexities of like the underground of alternative music, especially from what was happening in the UK, you know, but then managed to also pull in the amazing stuff that was happening in dance music, you know, in the 90s and the early noughties, and also recognized how to join those dots and then put something back out there which was exciting. You know, we were really lucky at that point, because you know, I wouldn't dare say like, oh, it wouldn't happen again or anything like that. All I'm trying to say is that at that point in time, those lanes crossing, you know, we were people who were brought up on that sound. We're people who were brought up reading The Enemy, you know, as well as reading, you know, Jockey Slut, as well as reading, you know, Mix Mag or Sounds or whatever. And then all of a sudden there's like a eureka moment where it's just like, oh, how these things can connect, you know? And there'll be its own, you know, right now in culture, in time, there'll be its own relative things happening right now, but they're simply not things that I would probably recognize as different aspects fused together, but I would probably enjoy what it is, the combination of, you know?
What it felt like for me around that time was that I think there was a period where things got a bit stale, maybe like early 2000s. And then I think certainly what you were doing had a big part of it. The whole load of new things came along that kind of got away from like big room trance and got away from like, you know, paying 20 quid to get in and, you know, and had that more rock influence, you know, and it just seems like the total opposite to the kind of commercial clubbing that had been happening, you know?
Well, I mean, a few things for me around then was that when people asked me what I did around like 98, 99, 2000, 2001, if I met someone, you know, on a bus or whatever, someone I didn't know, they asked me what I did, I wouldn't say I was a DJ. Because for me, being a DJ had many negative connotations because of things that were being put out through the media, you know, notably about the scene in Ibiza, which I have no issue with. Excuse me. But back then, there were a whole slew of like TV shows that were doing Ibiza no thanks at all, you know. You know, things like, you know, just showing it off as being this one-dimensional, like, kind of it just looked really bad. You know what I mean? And I was like, well, people think that is like the height or ambition of being a DJ, you know, playing in Ibiza for a club like that. And I had really negative feelings attached to Ibiza, where I was like, I'm never going to play in Ibiza. I would never play in Ibiza. And I was turning Ibiza gigs down all the time. I wouldn't go. But a couple of things happened. Number one, when I played the Annex at Cream for Bugged Out, I realized like how Cream had got to what it was. Like, I got it, because that room was absolutely incredible. And it made me reassess my feelings on Cream. I mean, like, I got a lot of respect for Cream now. Back then, I felt that through their size and through what the media was putting out, I think for the people on the outside of it, it kind of put them off a little bit. You know what I mean? And not because of what they were doing. It was just because of, you know, people just getting wasted and whatever. You know, bear in mind, this is at a time when I was doing Trash, where I was trying to, well, not I was trying to, but people were, you know, dressing up on a Monday and really making a huge effort, you know, to be part of a community, you know, in that sense. And just that whole thing of people just puking up on corners and stuff like that was just something that didn't really resonate with me. But when I went to Cream, I was just like, this is incredible, you know, and I got it. And I love that room. And, you know, I went to the Courtyard and heard some DJs playing the Courtyard, and that was amazing. And the thing that really changed for me also, and what was really odd, was when realized that what we were doing had kind of started taking over. Like, I remember on my birthday in 2003, me and two DJs played the main room at Nation, a Cream. It's just like, never thought like that would happen. And all of a sudden, you are like in that space, you know, you guys are in the main room. And it felt like things were changing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, for me, it was never really about giving something else a beating to take its place. I really didn't care. I didn't want to take anybody's place. I just wanted to create a space for what I was doing and who I was and for whatever it needed to be. Because there's enough space for everybody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's not a case of like, you know, you want to knock down a, you know, so-and-so or whatever sound. I don't really care for anyone else's sound. You know, I'm not that big-headed enough or arrogant enough to feel that like I have to be louder than everybody else in that sense, you know. But what I did want back then, and what I was driven to do, was to make sure that who we were and what we were represented was respected, you know. And that went right through to Trash as well, you know, being an alternative night and it being something that was alternative nights had a bad rep around that time, you know. They were known as being kind of scuzzy, dirty affairs that happened in like kind of like you know, clubs with bad sound systems and stuff like that, you know what I mean, which I also love, but you know, I think just because of the music that, you know, we were kind of representing and stuff, I just kind of felt that it deserved to sit alongside other things, you know. That was it.